Atenção, senhores espectadores. Muito boa tarde.
Corkout History presents
Grândola Vila Morena,
Picard Nation Revolution.
A partir deste momento, o movimento das Forças Armadas,
brought to you by André Andinés,
controla totalmente a rede emissora da Rádio e Televisão Portuguesa.
First of all, what is state art? And what is propaganda? Those are the two main things we're going to be talking today. State art is a term that can comprise like all the artistic expressions that are sponsored by governments, by the state. And therefore, they serve their political agendas and they might promote ideas of nationalism or states that want to be legitimized. And this can be opposed to art in a broader sense, art or in a freer sense that reflects individual creativity or other themes that are not state-owned. And of course, both state art and art in general involve creative expression, but state art aligns with state agendas, and it's not supposed to encompass such a broader range of creative autonomy and expression as general art. Got that? Now, propaganda. What is propaganda? Propaganda is the dissemination of biased and or possibly misleading information that's often used to manipulate public opinion and to promote specific ideologies or, again, agendas. Propaganda can use various techniques, including censorship and carefully selecting facts, and it aims to shape the perceptions and influence the behavior or support for one particular group, individual, cause, or the state. Sometimes it is very, very subtle and does it in a very subtle way. Other times, in much more open ones. Knowing what they are, we can easily see, of course, how these two things, state art and propaganda, go hand in hand, and how, of course, the Portuguese dictatorship, which is what we're talking about here, used them and would make use of them during the course of its regime. The new state heavily controlled cultural expression to maintain its grip on power. Art that was sponsored by the state served multiple purposes. It blended in with propaganda and also with economic objectives. It was a tool for promoting the regime's conservative ideology, but at the same time it stimulated economic growth and it fostered ideas of national pride, but we'll see how that happened. Because different from liberal states, the Portuguese regime had its hand in all aspects of life, and presenting itself as the great commissioner of the arts granted it, on the one hand, a saying in how these things looked and what messages were conveyed, while simultaneously holding an economic grip over artists, architects, and cultural institutions. The regime, like, strategically utilized public works projects, cultural initiatives, and even artisanal industries to create employment opportunities and bolster the economy. But even ideas of tourism and cultural industries were used for the promotion of Portuguese culture and heritage through this state-sponsored art, attracting tourists and generating income from this kind of tourism. The efforts, and this particular efforts, also aimed to enhance Portugal's prestige internationally and to strengthen diplomatic relations and project an image of cultural richness and of freedom that was not at all the reality. With Salazar, state art was characterized by its conservative and nationalist themes, emphasizing traditional Portuguese culture, history, and values. No surprises here. And the regime promoted art that glorified the nation's past and its imperial aspirations, while of course always suppressing dissenting voices and other movements that kind of challenged its authority. And I think that when looking back at this period, there are many names that are known in the art scene, and that we should all make an effort to avoid and look at them as one dimension. Yes, some of the artists' works were commissioned by the regime, but does that mean they were aligned with the dictatorship? Were they the artists, the exception that proved the rule? Were they artists that actually were fighting just in a different way? Each case is a case, and I think that we would need an episode for each. But, of course, that to mind come some names like Almadhen Greirur. He was one of the big names in painting, drawing, writing, and theater work. And he wasn't directly aligned with the regime. And yet some of his works, particularly his murals and decorative panels, were commissioned for state buildings and projects. Or we can think of Cotinelli Telmo, who was an architect that designed several buildings and monuments commissioned by the regime, including the Monument to the Discoveries in Lisbon, O Padrão dos Descobrimentos, which we'll talk about in a minute. But also the regime went as far as using artists that were no longer present, like Domingos Sequeira, who was a painter from the 18th and 19th century that painted a lot of historical paintings, and the Estado Novo used those paintings to support its own narrative. And these artists, all of them, and also the ones that were absent from the landscape, they've contributed to the visual and cultural landscape of Portugal during the dictatorship, whether through commissions for state projects or through their influence on the scene as a whole or their voices of dissent. And when thinking of who selected and organized all of this, we need to talk about António Ferro. António Ferro. Get that name? We'll get there. And, of course, one other prominent aspect of state art was the promotion of monumental architecture, public architecture, and monuments that were erected through the regime to symbolize Portugal's history and strength, and even works of recovering some monuments. There was a major campaign across the country to refurbish and get a few of the monuments back to life, say castles that were falling apart or palaces. And actually, much of the idea that we have of monuments in Portugal today has a lot to do with the choices that were made in that time. And there's a whole debate because a lot was done to some monuments, like the Castle of Lisbon, for instance, that changed very considerably from what they were to fit into the narrative of this grand country. On the other hand, it's also good because some of them were preserved, so it's always a double-sided coin, isn't it? And the greatest monument and one of the greatest moments of propaganda and sponsored state art was the Portuguese World Exhibition of 1940, and we would need to talk about this one, because it was known as the Exposição do Mundo Português, Portuguese World Exhibition, and it was an event organized by the state as a celebration of Portugal's colonial history and cultural identity that took place in Lisbon in 1940. And it aimed to showcase Portugal's past and present with an aura of greatness, and of course, reinstating the importance of the empire. The event featured many pavilions and had the colonies represented. Even people coming from those territories came, and there were a lot of art displays, industry, technology. It was a showcase of what was there to shout about in Portugal. And one of the most striking features was the monumental architect and the buildings that were constructed for the event. Amongst them, it was then that the Padrão dos Descobrimentos, the Monument to the Discoveries, was built. And it was built in the banks of the Tagus River, and it was a tribute to Portugal's age of discovery. And we've talked about it in this podcast in the past. And after the exhibition, it was actually erected in stone, and it still stands there today. And we could discuss what to do with it, but that's a whole different topic. And now we get to António Ferro. And one of the most significant state-sponsored cultural institutions of the time was the National Propaganda Secretariat, SPN, which controlled the artistic production, which controlled the commissions, which controlled the dissemination of information, which controlled the censorship and the propaganda that was inputted onto artists and everyone producing any kind of propaganda. The National Propaganda Secretariat yielded control over the production and dissemination of any art form during the regime, using censorship, as I said, using cultural events for it. It promoted a very defined, sanitized version of Portuguese history, and, of course, upholding the regime's values and suppressing any voices of dissent. And the SPN extended everywhere, from literature, media, and artistic expressions, as we said, but also to educational programs to indoctrinate loyalty to the regime amongst the people. And, of course, that despite its efforts, some figures still voiced their criticism to the regime's cultural policies. And António Ferro was always in this tension between modernity and this control over art. And it's quite an interesting figure to look at, because he was, yes, commissioning some, but he was also censoring some. So it's in between those that so many of them flourished, like Almada Negreiros, that navigated the tensions between their artistic independence and the regime's ideological constraints. A whole lot to be said about António Ferro and about what he gave room to and what he chose to not give room to. But as for propaganda, it extended far and wide. It took many shapes. It took the shape of a media that was controlled by the states, controlling newspapers, radios, news agencies, and using them to disseminate their messages. And of course, using all the public events, the cultural events, organizing public ceremonies and celebrations like the Portuguese World Exhibition or many others that were co-opted, even traditional festivities that were co-opted to either shut down or amplified to match the voice of the state. And of course, then we also have like more obvious propaganda materials like posters, pamphlets, films that glorified and celebrated Portuguese nationalism and demonized, of course, all its opponents. Even posters depicting Salazar were a thing, and it's all part of propaganda and all part of shaping people's lives. Even the curricula at school were drawn to promote that loyalty to the regime and to its values. From textbooks, school programs, educational materials, all had to fit into this one form. And we must also say that some ways of propaganda are subtler, are more embedded into discourse and into the way people choose to address certain topics, choose to avoid certain topics, and what is shown and what is hidden. But that would be a longer discussion. And we could stay here discussing what to do of all these expressions, of all this art and all these materials that were produced under the dictatorship. It's the longest in Europe, as we've mentioned, so a lot was produced and a lot of artists came and go under this dictatorship. And how should we read them? How should we read the art that they've made and their conditions? How should we look at their choices and the choices of the state and who gets to speak, who gets to be shut down, and the times in which the state tried to look more open towards the outside community and the outside world and gave more freedom to the artists, and times when it shut down and it implemented fiercer ways of control. But that would be basically a podcast for each case, each commission, each decision maker, and all the lines that are not clear between accepting and resisting. But I think one positive note is that even with a state that tried to control, dissenting voices emerged, many times even using the same means given by the state as a way of delivering hidden political messages of resistance. Artists and intellectuals throughout the century continued to resist, continued to challenge the authority, and they were at the same time laying the groundwork for the cultural and political changes that would eventually lead to the downfall of the Estado Novo. But what got censored along the way? What didn't? What were the choices to try and avoid that censorship? We're going to be talking about that in one of our next episodes, so stay tuned.
And this is where we'll stop for now. Join us on the next episode.
Until then, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Corkout History Pod, where you can reach out to us, let us know your thoughts, and discover more about the episodes.
Don't forget to rate and subscribe wherever you're listening to us.
Your comments really are crucial so that more people can find us.
Bye!